At Ready Robotics, we're building technology that disrupts the entire robotics and manufacturing industry by making robots easy to use.
Hello, everyone. I'd like to welcome you to the A3 Robot Industry Podcast today. This is the podcast dedicated to advanced manufacturing, capital equipment, and the robotics and automation industry. We'll be covering trends and topics important to advanced manufacturing and interview guests in our series of podcasts. My name is Jim Beretta and I'm your host. Our guest today is Cal Guerin from Ready Robotics. He is the co-founder and CTO. Ready Robotics is a fairly new company located in Columbus, Ohio, but they have their roots at Johns Hopkins University. They have a big goal at Ready Robotics. They want to make robots easier to use, easier to program, faster to market, faster to task, and make robots more accessible for people, not just in the manufacturing industry either. They want to disrupt the industry and literally change the game by democratizing the way robots are programmed, by taking programming away as a task and remove all the barriers. Cal Guerin has been working in the robotics space for more than 10 years, focusing on the design and usability of a wide variety of robots, including systems for space exploration, deep mining, surgery, and industrial manufacturing. While obtaining his PhD from Johns Hopkins University, Cal worked specifically on the challenge of making industrial robots more flexible and easy to use. The result was his award-winning Forge operating system and ready-to-use programming interface for industrial robots. Cal spun out his technology into Ready Robotics, an industrial robotics startup he co-founded in 2016. And his work has been featured in the Wall Street Journal, in Forbes, and Ready Robotics products have been called the Swiss Army Knife of Robots by Inc. magazine. So in today's episode of the Robot Industry Podcast, we will be covering some of the big issues, why and the how of taking on this audacious goal, the return on investment and how fast you can be up and running, and how did we get here? And we'll talk about the severe shortage of skilled trades, but especially in robot programming. So welcome to the webinar, Cal. We're happy to have you. And you have a story that you sent to me. And in this industry, it's really hard to show use cases. Can you tell our listening audience a bit about the products and the challenges?
Yeah, absolutely. And thank you so much for having me. So in our industry, robots are needed more than ever, right? We're seeing this with COVID. We're seeing this with the supply chain challenges that are out there. And we've seen a lot of manufacturers really struggling to keep up with demand, and they're very hungry for automation. But automation is very difficult. And that's something that we're trying to solve at Ready Robotics, is how do you make automation, specifically robotic automation, easier. So let me give you an example. So one of the case studies that we have is a company called Alicat. They are Alicat Scientific. They make a wide variety of components, but they critically make components for ventilators. And they entered the sort of March, April timeframe really smashed for work because of the demand. And they had several processes that they couldn't keep up with just because they had to produce so many of these components for ventilators. With our technology, they were able to unbox a robot, a robotic system, program it in a couple of days, and be up and running lights out production, so overnight with no one there at the factory, in 10 days. And they were able to get a return on investment of that robotic hardware in 30 days, which is unheard of in our space. And the reason they were able to have all of that success is because, as opposed to the traditional way where you buy a robot, you have to send your people out for really extensive training, or you have to bring in an outside integrator, all of which takes a huge amount of time, whether you're training your own people or whether you're bringing in this outside company, they were able to do it themselves. They were able to use our software, Forge OS, and the very easy to use programming software that's built into that to learn how to use robots in a couple of days. And then they were able to get a huge, very quick return on investment because they immediately unbottlenecked that process and were making more parts than ever before. And they were able to do it in short order. And that's really the transformative part of our technology for manufacturers, is that your own people now can work with robotic systems. Your own workers, even if they don't have a background in automation, if they're not an engineer, they don't have to be a computer scientist, none of that stuff, right? They can just be who they are and have all the experience that they have and add robotics as another tool on their belt. And that's something they can do very rapidly.
And Kel, you're robot agnostic. Can you tell the audience listening at home kind of what that means?
Absolutely. So if you look at the robotics industry today, it actually looks very much like the PC industry of the early 80s, right? You have a lot of different computers. They all ran their own operating system. They were all, you know, you sort of had to learn to use whichever one you wanted. And robots today are exactly the same. Each robot has its own operating system and programming language. And if you want to switch from one robot to another, you sort of have to relearn everything. You have to take more training and pay more money. And it just becomes a massive barrier because different robot companies provide different hardware that excel at different things. And so as a customer, you want choice. You want to be able to use any robot, whichever the best robot is, whether it's best from a performance standpoint, from a cost standpoint, whether it's a collaborative or non-collaborative robot so that you can work next to it without a cage, all of those different considerations, you're sort of tied into a single brand right now because it's so much effort to learn that single brand. And then everything, if you switch to a different brand, it's all different. So by making our software robot agnostic, we're sort of building this universal operating system for robots where every robot will have the same programming software running on top of it, right? You will be able to learn Forge OS and then use a Fanuc or a KUKA or a Yaskawa robot or a universal robot if you're interested in a collaborative robot or a different collaborative robot, right? You'll have all of those choices because you can switch from robot to robot and nothing changes. And that's the same thing that you saw in the computer industry when Microsoft came out with DOS and then Windows, is now you can pick whichever computer you want, whichever brand of computer you want that fits your needs. And it all runs that same operating system. So you don't have to relearn anything when you decide to switch laptop brands, right? We're used to that in the consumer electronics space and in the computing space. The robotic space is not like that at all. And that's really what we're trying to do, is make the robotic space. You talked about democratization, and that's exactly right, making it accessible to everybody. But we want everything to be accessible to everything, not just one robot brand that happens to be easier to use than all the rest. We want all of them to be easy to use.
We talked about this a little bit in the prep for this podcast. It used to be that Adept made all these controllers, and then companies went very proprietary in their controllers and in their software and their code. And why did that happen?
Well, from our perspective, I would say that Adept probably went a little too deep down the layer of control. Robotics companies are fundamentally hardware manufacturers that then build really great software to control that hardware, right? If you take a robotics company, they're going to invest a huge amount of money in making a very precision mechanical device, and then they're going to invest in building software that moves that precision mechanical device as accurately, as fast, as repeatably as possible, and that software is very good at compensating for all of the specific nuances of their hardware. And they're able to do that because they own both the hardware and software, right? So that low-level control software is very much a part of a robotics company's intellectual property and value, right? The software that lives above that, which is where an operator, like someone who's actually programming the robot, where they sort of play around, is where we exist, right? That's what we're trying to change, is that layer where you're actually interacting with the robot and programming the robot, and we're making that layer easy to use. And that preserves all of the value of the underlying controller, whereas in Adept's case, like Adept sort of went down in that area. And that's something that the robotics companies want to control because it's their hardware. They want their software to talk to their hardware. But we actually work with a variety of robot companies who are very excited about our technology, specifically because we solve this higher level problem, this problem of interaction that involves the user actually using their robot and programming their robot in a much, in a dramatically easier sort of paradigm than is the robot company software. And that's important because we see a lot of people who need to use this automation more. And the robot companies have been, they're sort of in an innovator's dilemma, right? Because they have their existing population that needs to still use their hardware, right? And they're used to programming whatever programming language is specific to that robot. But they're not able to, that robot company isn't really able to innovate because they have incumbents who are used to using that software. Well, we're thinking differently because we're thinking about, you know, not the just the 30,000-ish people that are in the United States right now that are able to program an industrial robot. And it's only 30,000. Which means that's one per every 10 factories in the United States, which is a paltry number, unfortunately. But we're thinking about it as what is the future going to look like in 20 years when there's 500,000 people or a million people instead of 30,000 people who can program robots? What interface do they need? And in order for it to be accessible to them, it can't be something that's difficult to use. It has to be something that's easy to use.
That's a crazy number that we really do have a very small number of robot programmers in North America or in the world, and that they need tools like this to be able to be competitive because engineering is not as prevalent in the factories.
That's exactly right. And unfortunately, the skills gap that is causing so much issue in the manufacturing space, right? Most manufacturing labor is, you know, older than 45 years old, which means you're starting in your retirement age, you know, and so the you have this widening skills gap of people who are leaving manufacturing who are really have the largest mind share of how to do these industrial tasks, and they're not being replaced. And so that means that one, that's giving manufacturing a lot of issues because it doesn't have the people that it actually needs to make the products that we use and depend on, which is why we want more automation, right? And so that's an obvious sort of like, okay, now I have more automation, that sort of solves things, right? Well, the problem is there's not enough people, there's the same skills gap for people who know how to install automation. And so in order to install automation at the rate we need to keep up with demand, which we are currently failing to do, we're not keeping up with demand from an automation standpoint, just because it is so difficult. It is, you have to have this bespoke knowledge about automation, which makes very few people qualified to do it. And then those integrators and automation experts are slammed all the time and don't have time to take on new projects, which means another company who's now wants automation has to wait, or they have to upskill their own people, and it goes back full circle to what we talked about at the beginning.
So Kel, one of the interesting things about your approach is that take the top, I don't know, 20 robot manufacturers, and maybe not all their software is really easy to use. I know there's some robot companies, their software is super easy to use, but you're, by democratizing this software, by putting it across all kinds of different lands, you get rid of that problem. So do the robot companies love you? Are you currently working with any?
So yeah, so we're working with a number of robot companies, and we have really great relationships with them because, again, through this democratization, that means that more people are going to be consumers of robots, right? Think back to the computer age, right? The 1970s, not a lot of people were buying computers. They were these big, huge things. They were super bespoke. You had to have specific knowledge to use them. The market for robots was very low, right? And even so poor as to say that, you know, Watson, I think, famously said, you know, there's a global market for five computers back in, you know, in the 50s and 60s, right? Which is absurd now, but it's only absurd because of what happened in the 80s when we saw usability drive the mass adoption of computers, right? You had companies out there like Apple who were saying, look, it shouldn't be this way. Your mom should be able to balance her checkbook at her kitchen table with a computer. And that drove a huge amount of adoption. So by playing that same game right now today in the robotics space, what we're saying is anybody can use a robot. A robot should be a much more widely available tool. The byproduct, and then we're enabling that with our software, right? The byproduct of that is these robot companies could sell 10 to 100 times more robots than they are selling now in the next 20 years, right? It'll be absurd that we're only selling, you know, 300,000 to 400,000 robots a year, and it'll be millions of robots a year, just like we're selling billions of computers a year today. And in 1979, we were selling hundreds of computers globally, right? That's the difference. That's that transformative power that usability really has, because as soon as everyone views a robot as a tool, and you know, we're looking at manufacturing now, but in the future, you're talking about in your home, you're talking about coffee shops, you're talking about pizzerias, all of that, those places where robots could potentially be used, but they're not because they are such a heavy lift right now in terms of usability.
You had said earlier too, in another call, that we talked a little bit about machine tending, and you said, Jim, you know, machine tending is really a ridiculous task, because, and I'd like you to explain a little bit what your thoughts are on that.
Yeah, it really comes down to talent, right? Because there are, in the manufacturing space, and I've visited, you know, upwards of 300 factories in the last 10 years. And I've met the most incredible people you have ever met, the most talented people who are able to just do impossible things in the manufacturing space, hold incredibly tight tolerances and make precision components, right? And they do that because they're very, very good at what they do. And they have a huge amount of experience in doing that thing, right? And that, when I saw what these people end up spending most of their time doing all day long, was not that, right? So you'll have, you know, let's talk about machine tending, right? You'll have a machinist who probably has 30 years of experience. They're a wizard at setting up this machine to make this component, right? They spend 5 to 10% of their time setting up that machine, doing that super valuable task. And then they spend the other 90% of their time putting pieces of metal into it
and picking and placing.
Right. They're not spending their time doing what they're good at, what they like doing, what they're valuable at. They're spending their time doing this drudgerous task, right? The ability that we have with our software to democratize the programming means that that person at that factory who has all that domain specific knowledge is able to learn how to use a robot in a day and install that robot in a couple of days or a week, as we saw with Alicat Scientific. And that's not, you know, we have a lot of examples of this exact same situation where you had a machinist who learned how to use a robot, ended up programming the robot themselves to do the machine tending, right? That pick and place stuff. And now they're off being valuable a much higher percentage of their time, right? They're running five machines instead of one. They're spending the majority of their time setting up these machines to hold this, you know, incredible precision. And that's massively more valuable than them spending most of their time slinging pieces of metal.
Yes, or they're teaching other people, right? So I think that there's so many, and this goes along with your idea of it's okay to automate your own job.
Yeah, and that's something, there's been a lot of trends in this. When we're talking about automation, there's been a lot of trends in sort of the white collar space with automation as well. And there was a great article in Forbes recently on this exact same topic. But, you know, people are rewarded for making themselves more efficient at their jobs, right? That's always been a thing. And automation is no different, right? If this machinist figures out a way through automation to multiplex himself, right? To make himself more valuable at his task. Right now, he's running five machines instead of one. They're making five times the parts, right? He's doing five times the amount of value-adding work than he was before. That is something to be proud of, right? He's used a tool to make himself more productive. And the fact that automation gets sort of a bad rap for, you know, that we're saying, well, we replaced him with a robot. Well, we replaced all the things that he hates doing and that he's not valuable at with a robot, but he's still there, more valuable than ever, doing his job. So that's a trend that I think we're going to see more, and that I've seen in the last 5 years, the narrative shifting more towards, you know, automation is incredibly valuable and good for workers because it allows those workers to focus on the most value adding parts of their tasks. They're not, you know, in the white collar space, they're not sitting there doing data entry all day long. They're sitting there thinking about hard problems and using their creativity to solve things that we can't solve with automation. Same thing on the manufacturing floor. It's really unlocking their potential as an employee, whether they're sitting at a computer or working in a machine shop, to be at their best and be creating the most value they can.
What customers are you working with and why?
Sure. So we work with a wide variety of customers, everything from smaller entities like Alley Cat Scientific all the way up to large, billion-dollar corporations. And the reason is because they all need automation and they all see the value of automation. Now, it's different, right? So a smaller company might have a much more urgent need where they need to install a robot right now. That was the case with Alley Cat Scientific, and our technology was very accessible for them. For the larger corporations, it actually, this easy to use cross platform, cross brand technology really allows them to think differently about automation because, they've had to make strategic decisions around a single robot brand because they want as few platforms as possible, right? They want, all of their people to know one programming language, one robot language, et cetera, so that they can move people from different facilities and have that flexibility, right? And or centralize a lot of that expertise. They also want the ability to pick and choose different robots for different markets, right? If you're building in the United States, you might have one brand of robot. If you have a factory in Asia, it just makes more sense to have a more local brand that is a less expensive robot, right? They don't have that ability of choice right now. They are locked into a single robot brand because they've invested a bunch of money in learning and training their people on that brand, right? So with our software and technology, they're sort of unlocked, again, as I said, they now have the freedom to pick whichever robot they want. They can deploy it however they want. And all of it is on that same software. Their people only have to learn one thing. They can centralize their expertise around Forge OS and our easy to use software. And then they can just pick whichever tool, whichever robot they need for whichever problem they have. So we've had a lot of success with a wide variety of customers, both large and small. We also have a lot of interest from educational institutions because there's a lot of educational institutions out there who are interested in upskilling people who are not in manufacturing to be able to do manufacturing jobs to, again, solve that skills gap. But robotics has sort of been out of reach for those programs. Or in the rare case where you do have an educational program that has a robotics component, it's usually a single brand of robot. And so when that student goes out into the wild now, they're locked in, right? If they learned FANUC during their program, that's great. But now you can't work for Toyota because Toyota uses Yaskawas, right? It's that type of dilemma that you have with those students.
So I wanted to get back to education a bit more. You're starting something very innovative in the industry and it's called Ready Academy. Can you tell our audience a little bit about what that's about?
Absolutely. So Ready Academy is an online educational platform. And really what it's designed to do is to teach you how to use an industrial robot to do real tasks. And when I say you, I mean anyone. You don't have to be have any familiarity with robotics. You don't need to be an engineer. You could be, a 10-year-old kid, honestly. It's that easy. And what's important about that is right now, when you go to any other educational course for a robotic system, you're going to spend between 2 and 6 weeks learning how to use the robot to make the robot move, essentially, in the way that it needs to move. you're not going to learn about automation. You're not going to learn how to actually get value out of that device. With our course, and we've seen this, I can give you an example later on, but with our course, you learn how to actually use the robot and move the robot around in a day. And then the rest of the course actually is not about the robot. It's about how to use the robot in all of the and do all of the other things that you need to do to actually make a robot valuable in production. How do you hold parts with the robot? Where do the parts come from? What device do you have that provides parts for the robot? How do you interact with the machine? Where do the parts go when they're done? All of these questions are things that have to be solved in addition to programming the robot. And then the programming makes the robot sort of go between all of these different devices. But what that allows us to do and what our software allows us to do is now we are able to create an educational platform that focuses less on the robot, on the tool, and more on how you create value with the tool. And because during our course, in fact, even the educational content, we have different robots that we play with. So some of the courses are done with a Fanuc, some of them are done with a Yaskawa, some of them are done with a non-collaborative robot, some of them are done with a collaborative robot. And we don't differentiate because it doesn't matter from that perspective, right? You're using a robot, you're going to learn about the device, that robot. And since you're using that same easy to use software to program any of those robots, you now could have experience with a lot of different robotic systems with that same software, right? So the online course material is really designed to prepare you for actually deploying robots into a real production setting. Our first course, a set of courses is really designed around machine tending, but we're going to have a huge amount of other content that is designed to teach you about a lot of other things that robots are typically used for. And that's really the differentiator, is being able to go to an online course where you can learn about these different types of applications of how to use the robot to make money, frankly, rather than just learning how to move a robot around. That doesn't solve anything. You have to have all of the other stuff and all of the other knowledge to be able to get the robot to do the thing you need to do where it's creating value for you or your organization. So we're really excited about that because it really allows anyone to log on online and learn about industrial robots in a very real way and how to create value with them. So that's something that's going to go live October 2nd. We have a really exciting webinar planned where, so if you go to ready.academy in your web browser, you'll be able to sign up for that webinar. It's all free, and you'll actually see live us talking about that content, and we'll give a tour of our facility where we build our technology and also where we record the studio, where we record this educational content. You'll see how real it is and what you'll be able to do with this online content that really isn't, really hasn't been possible before. That kind of online content that teaches you the nuts and bolts of using a robot in addition to programming is really a first.
This sounds very exciting. I will absolutely log into that. I think it'd be interesting to watch. So my past is coming from a big robot automation integrator. How do you work with automation integrators?
Absolutely. So we work with several integrators, and they're very excited about our platform because it makes their job easier, right? A lot of integrators, again, like companies, are sort of locked into a specific brand of robot because that's what they're skilled at. So if they want to work on other jobs that use a different brand of robot, then that's a burden that they have to bear to get upskilled onto that different platform. So by working with us, they now have that same ability to use their skills on a much wider variety of problems. And what is really great about integrators is they, a lot of times, solve very domain-specific problems, right? They have that same knowledge that I mentioned that's inside a factory is also in the head of an integrator because they're used to solving specific problems for customers, right? If you look at the food space, right, there are integrators who specialize in conveying, in food-safe conveying of foods, right? And they're hugely knowledgeable about that, potentially more knowledgeable than their customer. And that's why they get hired by that customer to install these systems is that knowledge, right? A lot of the integrators that we've talked to got into robotics because just of the demand, like, well, you make me a conveyor, but now I need a robot at the end of that conveyor picking those parts out, right? And so that integrator sort of had to get into robotics, and that was not an easy thing to do, right? And it's not their sort of specific expertise, right? The robotics is sort of a means to an end for them. They know about food safe conveying, right? That's their business for 50 years. The robotics is a new thing for them. And so by making robots easier, and by democratizing it and allowing them to have the choice of whichever robot they want to work with, all using the same easy to use software, that just makes their job integrating robots even easier. And you're always going to have customers that either don't have the time or don't have the specific domain specific expertise that need an integrator to come in. We still see that in the computer space way. We bring in IT companies all the time to help us with computers, even though most of us know how to use a computer. So there's always going to be a place for third parties with this specific expertise. We're just making them, giving them better tools to work with robots than they've previously had.
Thank you for that. Kel, I'd like to thank you for taking the time out of your day to chat with our audience. And how can people get in touch with you?
Absolutely. So as I said, our website is ready-robotics.com. You can go there, look at our case studies, white papers. There's a lot of information there about how our customers are using our products to really drive value in a way that they've never been able to do before with robotics. If you're interested on the education side, go to ready.academy. That's the web address. You can sign up for our webinar. And then if you're listening to this later on, you'll have a huge amount of material, right? We're starting with 40 hours of content, and it's only going to grow from there. So from an educational perspective, if you're interested in getting into industrial robots and don't know where to start, if you've been hearing about the problems in manufacturing and you want to become involved in that and help, and you think that your expertise is valuable in that space, go to ready.academy, because you'll be able to see a very clear path there to creating value with robotic systems in a very real way. If you want to get in touch with me, it's just my first name, kel@ready-robotics.com. That's my email. Please reach out. I'm always happy to talk with people, hear interesting ideas, and talk about this stuff, because this is why I created the company, right? This is why we started Ready Robotics, was to make manufacturing better, to really unlock this industry that is so vitally important for the world, and do that through the automation that it so desperately needs.
Thank you, Kel. I'd like to thank and acknowledge our partner, the A3, the Association for Advancing Automation. A3 is the umbrella association for the RIA, the AIA, MCMA, and A3 Mexico. These four associations combined represent almost 1,300 automation manufacturers, component suppliers, systems integrators, end users, research groups, and consulting firms throughout the world that are driving automation forward. And I'd also like to thank and recognize our partner, Painted Robot. Painted Robot builds and integrates digital solutions. They're a web development firm that offers SEO and digital social marketing, and can set up and connect CRM and other ERP tools that unify marketing, sales, and operations. As web and digital is changing, Painted Robot is helping advanced manufacturers stay modern and competitive in the space. And they're at paintedrobot.com. And if you'd like to get in touch with us, our email address is robotindustrypodcast@gmail.com, or you can find me, Jim Beretta, on LinkedIn. If you have an idea or an interesting company or technology you'd like to be a guest or nominate someone to be a guest, please get in touch with me, and we'll see you next time. Thanks for listening, and be safe out there. Today's podcast was produced by Customer Attraction Industrial Marketing, and I'd like to thank my nephew, Chris Gray, for the music, Chris Colvin for audio production, my partner, Janet, and our sponsors, A3 and Painted Robot.